This is KJZZ, your news and information station in Phoenix and across Arizona. I'm Tiara Vian, and here are this week's stories you don't want to miss. It's the podcast designed to catch you up on some highlights from around the region. Thanks for listening. Here are a few of the stories for the week of September 23rd, 2024. In Tribal Natural Resources, which is supported in part by a grant from the Katina Foundation. You heard how a Phoenix nonprofit has been distributing non-eagle feathers to tribal members in Arizona and beyond. Less than a decade later, the State Game and Fish Department adopted the nonprofit's approach. As Gabriel Pietrazio reports, the department has been hand-delivering a different form of wildlife to tribal members statewide.
And here are the latest deposits.
Arizona Game and Fish Department tribal liaison John Cooley counts the stone-cold shells of desert tortoises. Dozens of them living at the department's headquarters in Phoenix got sick and have been euthanized. But even in death, these frozen reptiles are finding new life.
I try to get them out quickly. Without the repository, they would go in the dumpster. Then what? So there's a missed opportunity, knowing that there's a culture out there that really has high interest in doing something productive with that wildlife.
But until then, they're stored in freezers scattered across Arizona.
So I have one in Pine Top, a big one, another big one in Flag, and then this one here at headquarters.
Some affectionately refer to this collection of coolers as the roadkill repository, but Cooley says that's not entirely accurate.
Because at the end of the day, we're not just handing them over smashed roadkill.
But in all seriousness, some are roadhit animals, others are seized from illegal hunting, and some hunters donate what they legally kill. Nearly 150 miles north of Phoenix in downtown Flagstaff, we're meeting a Hopi from Third Mesa named Ivan. He's a mechanic and heard about the repository when a Game and Fish employee came to his auto shop with a flat tire.
Hey, Ivan, it's John.
We pull into the parking lot, Cooley unhooks the tailgate.
Oh, okay. And I want you to look at it.
And he likens this exchange to a daytime drug deal.
Here's another bag full of them. You're still good?
Yeah, that's fine.
Here's another bag of them.
Ooh. Okay.
Still good?
Yeah, that's fine.
Because I have probably three more of these.
Oh, but really?
I have another guy that said he would be interested.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I talked to one of my friends out on the res, and I told him that I was going to have a bunch of these coming in, so
yep.
He'll probably work on them.
Before the shells are handed off, Cooley asks,
none of this stuff is going to be used, like, for commercial uses.
No, this is all going to be ceremonial.
But Cooley cannot vet and verify that everyone will use them properly.
I don't have the authority, I don't have the capacity or the manpower. That's a lot of work.
With no guarantee aside from their word, there has to be lots of good faith and trust.
To be honest, I don't even know of any other state agency does this with their tribes.
Darren Taliemtawa is Hopi and a Southwest Regional Director with the Native American Fish and Wildlife Society, which bought the freezers for the Game and Fish Department. And these tortoises, native to both the Mojave and Sonoran deserts, have long been protected by the Endangered Species Act. This law makes it illegal to harass, harm, or collect them. Those who do can face up to a year in prison and fines totaling $50,000 per count. But tribes are exempt from these punishments, since the shells are cherished, especially among Hopis.
Those are really coveted items that we use for our ceremonies. So when we do get them, they're used a lot.
But this meetup wouldn't have been possible without Cooley, who grew up on the Fort Apache Reservation, home to the White Mountain Apache tribe, and figured that deceased wildlife can fulfill another purpose aside from decaying in a landfill.
Any amount of time I spend doing this or traveling to meet someone is well worth the benefit. But whatever cost that adds up to, I would say more than pays off. Strengthening our relationships with tribes is a bonus.
For KJZZ News, I'm Gabriel Pietrazio reporting from Flagstaff.
And you can find the entire series on our website, kjzz.org.
After Phoenix's hottest summer ever, fall is now off to a record-breaking start. Wednesday's temperature passed 110 degrees, and as Catherine Davis Young reports, Phoenix has never had temperatures that hot so late into September.
On average, Phoenix is done with 110-degree temperatures by late August, and the latest Phoenix has ever hit 110 degrees was September 19th, back in 2010. Wednesday's high resets that record by 6 days. And the record will likely be extended even further. An excessive heat warning remains in effect through this weekend. Phoenix has already broken the record this year for most days above 110 degrees. As of Wednesday, 62 days this year have passed the 110 mark. On average, Phoenix typically gets just 21 days per year that hot. Catherine Davis Young, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
And this is the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. Thanks for listening. Every Wednesday, KJZZ offers up hotspots to spice up your weekend. It's delivered right to your phone. Try something new or step out of the routine. Just visit hotspots.kjzz.org to sign up. In Fronteras News. Rhetoric over border and immigration policy is front and center this election, both here at home and nationally. Arizona shares a more than 350-mile-long border with Mexico, and some Arizonans live right along or very near that boundary. So what's it like to be a border resident now? From the Fronteras Desk, Elisa Resnick has more.
Immigration and border issues are all around us right now.
It is a very rambunctious crowd.
At a recent campaign stop in Tucson, former President Donald Trump was on stage for less than 15 minutes before leveling a familiar accusation about Vice President Kamala Harris and migrants at the border.
She and Crooked Joe have destroyed our country with millions of criminals and mentally deranged people pouring into the USA, totally unchecked, unvetted.
Harris, for her part, has focused on a bipartisan Senate bill that would have funded things like more Border Patrol agents, customs personnel, asylum officers, and more border wall. It failed to advance in Congress this spring when all but one GOP senator voted against it. Here she is on the debate stage in Philadelphia this month.
Do you know what happened to that bill? Donald Trump got on the phone, called up some folks in Congress, and said, kill the bill. And you know why? Because he'd prefer to run on a problem instead of fixing a problem.
This summer, the Biden administration enacted a temporary rule that dramatically restricts asylum at the border. Migrant arrests and asylum interviews have plummeted as a result. As for Arizona's response to those issues, Joe Garcia, with Chicanos por la Causa's nonpartisan voter outreach initiative Latino Loud, says historically, it's complicated.
At times, it's sort of a schizophrenic voting pattern when it comes to immigrants in Arizona voting.
Like back in 2022, Garcia says, when Arizona voters passed a ballot initiative allowing undocumented students access to in-state tuition and scholarships. Meanwhile, an initiative on the ballot this November will ask voters to decide on whether to require local law enforcement to carry out immigration-related arrests.
And I think those on the hard far right use that immigrant issue far too often. But at the same time, those who are on the left haven't done immigrants near enough favor.
Rosario Carrillo says as a border resident, she feels like she's seen that firsthand. She was born and raised in Rio Rico, a small town just north of the border city of Nogales. She says she was a John McCain supporter for years. Now she's voting for Harris.
So for me, it's been a complete change just because of the way that the Republican Party has taken it so far. And I can't align myself with that anymore. So
she says as a mother to two young daughters, this year she's most focused on reproductive rights issues. But hearing the rhetoric around the border where she lives has also made an impact.
Well, 2016 was about my race. Now it sees as migrants, but in 2016, it was a lot of Mexicans. Mexicans are here to do this. Mexicans are rapists. Mexicans are this. It's like, well, I'm a Mexican.
Carrillo says she wants to see solutions from candidates instead. But what that means exactly depends on who you ask. I'm at a Burger King overlooking the DeConcini port of entry. It's a busy crossing connecting Nogales, Sonora and Nogales, Arizona, or ambos Nogales. Rolling hills topped with colorful homes poke out from the Mexican side of the metal border wall, and a lineup of cars wait to cross on the Arizona side. Al Gonzalez and Ray Swirsky are here from Tucson. They're lifelong friends, originally from Chicago.
We played Little League ball, believe it or not.
He was an altar boy at the church.
They came to cross into Mexico today so Swirsky's wife could get some dental work done. They're also both military veterans. As for politics, though, Swirsky says they try not to talk about it.
Seeing that he's on one side of the road and I'm on the other side, we try not to get too involved in that. You know, I don't want to talk about it with friends.
Swirsky says what he sees here in Nogales isn't like how the border is being described this election season. Still, he thinks immigration is a big issue. He says he wishes there were a third option, but he thinks he's probably going to vote for Trump again this year.
Well, Trump said he's going to take them up, close the borders and get all these illegal immigrants out of the country. I don't know how he's going to do it. I don't care how he does it.
Gonzalez is a Harris supporter. And when it comes to immigration,
I don't think there's an immigration problem. I think there's a problem with the using immigration as a lever to bring out hate, bring out negativity.
Gonzalez's parents came from Mexico City to Chicago, and he was born in the U.S. He says he doesn't want to see immigration used in the way he sees it happening now. But he hopes having more conversations can change that. Alisa Resnick, KJZZ News, reporting from Nogales.
In business news, a conservative think tank says Gilbert plans to impose an illegal pickleball tax. Cameron Sanchez reports the problem is a disagreement over the difference between goods and services.
Gilbert is proposing a series of slight tax increases, plus a new use tax on online vendors. The funds would go to several things, including work on police, fire, and parks infrastructure, including, yes, pickleball courts. But the Goldwater Institute says that some of those taxes will be on intangible services, which municipalities can't raise taxes on, according to an amendment to the state constitution voters approved in 2018. Goldwater attorney Stacey Skanky.
We don't hate pickleball. This is an issue of whether it's illegal under the Arizona Constitution.
Gilbert says the Goldwater Institute is, quote, plainly wrong about the proposed tax increases being on service taxes rather than taxes on goods. Skanky says the Institute is keeping its options open as to whether they'll take the town to court. Cameron Sanchez, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
In education news, ASU announced it will close its Lake Havasu campus and implement a tuition surcharge for on-campus students due to what the university said is $24 million of state cuts to higher education. Nick Carmia reports.
Lake Havasu's closure next summer will impact approximately 225 students, ASU said. The tuition surcharge, starting spring 2025, will be about $350 for full-time students and a proportional amount for part-time students. ASU also said that a decrease in funding towards its Arizona Promise Scholarship Program and Arizona Teachers Academy will impact thousands of students. In the state's most recent budget, ASU's funding from the state decreased by almost $11 million. Nick Carmia, KJZZ News, Phoenix.
And finally, in KJZZ's original productions, a peek into the Last Resort series. Here's co-host Lauren Gilger.
From all over the world, come visitors to relax and rest in the sun-drenched desert of Arizona. Dude ranches, great resort hotels, inns.
Scottsdale is delightful and clean and new.
Phoenix, a simply splendid city. Don't worry for a minute about a place to stay.
There is a ruggedness here, a loveliness here, that combines into a package of colorful memories. History, wildlife, entertainment, grandeur, they're all here awaiting you on your Arizona holiday.
Today's hidden gem is the Camelback Inn Chapel. Very modest in size, it would be easy to miss this piece of the resort's history. The show's Sativa Peterson met up with Scott Jarson, a longtime realtor in town who specializes in architecturally unique properties. The two walked around the structure, which remains relatively unchanged some 85 years later.
Today we're at the Camelback Inn. It's a ubiquitous desert inn that has morphed through the years, and we're at a very unique structure on the property. It's one of the few structures here that date back to the early beginnings of the resort, and it's right up by the valet where you check in. But it's the chapel. It was built in 1938, And it's a stone structure. It's really organic in nature. It's modest in size. It's built out of native Arizona rock. There's little pieces of copper ore embedded into the rock here and there. But it's a wonderful small space, and it just has a piece of history. It just says a little Arizona structure in the desert. Sure, like a lot of people who visit Arizona or those of us who have grown up here, we've all been coming to the Camelback Inn for decades, and we've seen it more from a more traditional sort of adobe structure into some 70s and even 2000 updates. But this structure has always remained the same. The walls, the integrity of the structure have been the same since 1938. And it's overlooked. You kind of come in and you get drawn into the grand scheme of the resort. But here it is, this little piece of history still intact. It's very modest in size, maybe 16 by 16. Nice low ceilings. And we happen to be here on a summer day. It's very, very comfortable, even though there's not a lick of air conditioning in here. But it was a structure that wasn't meant to be inhabited. I think it was a place of reflection. And maybe at some point, maybe a light place of worship, but it's not large enough to hold any kind of big events in here. Here's a little piece that they can preserve unchanged that doesn't have a specific use. In other words, it's not a dining room, it's not a guest room. It can remain as it was. And I think it really does lure and hearken the visitors back to a time when this was a desert place. And you'd come here to interact with things like native stone and small hand-built spaces. So I think it serves a number of purposes, and one is a great little surprise for the visitors who might be strolling to the parking lot and say, hey, what's that building? I know I've had a lot of friends through the years. We'd come for brunch, and I'd say, let me show you my favorite part of Camelback Inn. As we've grown up, these desert resorts have either gone away or they've morphed into something a little more complex. But if you go back to the beginnings, when people would come here for the dry climate, for just a solitary sort of adventure in the desert, this is what they were expecting. And this is what you get in these little structures. The desert's all around us, so we do hear the birds. And we're in a heavily landscaped place with beautiful cactus specimens. But what we're hearing is the nature interacting with those. What I do love about it is a little funky. There's not a lot of, capital A architecture here. This is obviously hand-built. It harkens back a little to sort of Victorian follies, where people would build something maybe out of scale, but from a distance it looked like a ruined castle, that sort of thing. So to some extent, I feel like this is a little folly in the desert, and it just shows hand of the maker, which I love too. You can see the grout lines where somebody obviously built this. This wasn't a big crew. This is probably two or three people really honoring this little building. Our desert is very special, but it's a harsh environment. And having a respite from the sun, from the heat of the day, or even the chill of the night is something that's almost primal. And you see it in a lot of good desert architecture. And this structure is kind of one of those. It's a sense of shelter the minute you walk into it. You're out of the sun, and you're still connected to the earth.
That was Scott Jarson, realtor and founder of the real estate firm Jarson & Jarson. If you want to check it out, the Camelback Inn Chapel is located right next to the valet stand where guests check in.
And this has been the Stories You Don't Want to Miss podcast. It's made possible in part by Helios Education Foundation and Alliance Bank, the Vitalist Health Foundation, the Intel Corporation and Beach Fleischman, the Arizona Community Foundation, and the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Thank you for listening to KJZZ and for your generous support. I'm Tiara Vian. This is KJZZ, your news and information station. Stay hydrated.